We're on.
All right.
Green basement.
Hello.
Okay, so today we're going to talk about how do we teach our kids emotions. I think this is such an interesting topic because we spend so much time like making sure our kids understand math and they really understand writing and making sure they understand reading and, you know, science, and we're looking at all of this stuff and we're quizzing them about history, and we just don't talk a lot about our emotions. I mean, we point it out, like, I get it, you're angry right now, or, but we don't investigate it and we don't, you know, examine it the way that we spend so many years looking at other things. And I think emotions affect everything we do all the time.
Yeah, very true. And I mean, I think back on my childhood and it's true. There's no formal education in school. There wasn't, I'm trying to think. I don't think I found it, you know, in my home necessarily, where we sat down and talked about how to feel or how to recognize our feelings and give them space to be felt. But I do think that we definitely, or I'm speaking for myself as a parent, I'm definitely teaching emotional, what would you call it? Maybe not awareness, but I am teaching emotions.
I think it's awareness, right? It's just pointing out, it's making your kids aware, like, these are emotions happening to you or happening to me. Like, right now, I'm your mom and I'm in this emotion and this is how it feels for me.
Yeah, I guess for better, I mean, yeah, for better, for worse, I'm teaching it all the time. Yeah, and I would think my brain was more going towards the worse. As in, you know, they're crying or there's a huge argument and my initial reaction is I just want to stop the argument or the crying. I think that's a natural impulse to almost stop an emotion that we would label as negative.
Like, yeah,
there's anger, and so because of the anger, there's yelling, or there's a lot of sadness. So because of the sadness, there's a huge fit or a ton of tears. And, mm-hmm. you know, yelling and tears, it's not like you don't really want that in your house. You know, if you can have like peace and quiet.
Yeah, that's our natural instinct, is like, stop this emotion. Plus I avoid it. Like, I avoid emotions for my kids. If I get information and I know they're going to be disappointed, then I'm like, oh no, how am I going to tell them about that? We're canceling the vacation, or we're, the friend isn't coming over this afternoon we thought. And so I'm like trying to avoid these emotions of disappointment or dismay, or, and you and I have talked about like the heavy emotions like grief. I don't want my kids to experience grief. Of course I do, because I want them to know what that feels like. And when something is sad, when there's a big loss, but it, part of me is just like, I just want to keep them in a safe bubble and not have to experience these emotions.
Yeah. Totally. I actually have a very recent example of this, because we just started virtual at home school and last week. And of course there's going to be a transition period. So, and we're still adjusting, and there's going to be upset moments and tears. And we definitely had those in the first few days, but the second day, yeah, my oldest son, he's 9 years old, he came down and was just in tears. And I think it had really sunk in that this is what school is going to look like for an undetermined amount of time. I'm not giving him a date, because I don't have a date. Nobody knows. Of, you know, they're not going to transition back to school in where we live. I know other people are. But he said, I'm on the screen for 6 hours and I'm still not making any friends. And we, you know, just moved recently, so it wasn't a great time to move because nobody's out wanting to make new friends. And he just was in tears, and I didn't know what to say to him. And I didn't, to your point, I hurt when he hurts, and I don't want him to be sad. I want to keep him from suffering. That's what we want for our kid. But at the same time, there was nothing I could give to him except for just cry too and say, I know this is really hard for all of us. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think in the things that we've read and that we're learning, that is a fine position to take, right? But it also feels uncomfortable because I want to fix it.
Yeah.
But I think that's the whole point, is that we don't have to.
Right. It's so hard. If you had never like studied anything about emotions and just read how to feel and any of this, like how would you react to your kid crying? Because I'm like, let's have a brownie. Like, let's, you know, like let's call up a video friend right now that from somewhere else and just make, I would just want to push away those feelings and then get back into like happiness and forget about that right away.
Yeah, it's so true. And we do it as adults. So why not? It comes very natural to do that with our kids.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to change it. So I have with my kids right now, I mean, there are times when I'm still going back to those old patterns, but I can see myself doing it. I know I can recognize like, I should probably let them feel this hurt, you know, or this disappointment, but it's just hard. And there are other times where I just recognize I have to be in this place and feel hurt. And right now my son, who is 13, plays a lot of video games. So I'm teaching this really interesting class. I had this idea for how to teach emotional science based on video games. So I can talk to the kids because they're interested in talking about their video games. And it's like, what do you feel during these video games? And when do you feel like a sense of accomplishment? And when do you feel disappointment? And how often do you get frustrated? And then comparing it to real life, like if you start your new Mario Brothers game or something and you just try 64 times to get to the, you know, whatever the end goal is, or to the get to the next level in real life, would you try something 64 times before you quit? Would you just get a little further? Would you try it 4 times and be like, I don't get this, I give up? And just comparing that, or like, what could your strategy be if your sister is going into like explosion mode? Like, what tools do you need to react? If your real life is worth looking at it as a video game, do you need to go into like peacemaker mode to solve this? Or do you need, you know, like some battle armor on? Because how is that going to play out? Who's going to win and lose if you engage with your sister when she's in explosive mode? And it's just so interesting to hear how they have ideas for all of these questions and how they can look at it when you're looking at your emotions through a video gaming window. Kind of gives them the opportunity to not be like, oh, we're just talking about emotions and feeling, you know, your sense of pride and your love, and when you're feeling angry, it feels much more fun for them and they're engaged. So it's really interesting to hear what they have to say about how they understand their emotions.
That's awesome. Yeah, that makes sense. I was just thinking, yeah, so how do we do this with our kids? And that seems to come to mind first, is what can we take from their life that they're already doing, that they're interested in, and relate it to emotional awareness. Yeah. And that's so cool that you had that epiphany to use gaming as a way to explore that. So what feedback have you gotten from the
team? I mean, it's so fun because they all have emotional reactions to their games. And I think there is like this I mean, it kind of, it's like a stereotype of like the intense, like video gamer kid, like throwing the game controller down and like being so furious. And I've talked to other parents about these kinds of reactions. Or it's like in Minecraft is one game where you can build creatively and you can come up with, you know, create some huge castle and the kids kind of work on it for a long time and then someone else can destroy it or come in and take all the supplies that you've gathered or something, and how disappointing that is. And how in real life, if you create something and someone ruins it, you know, how are you going to react? And so the kids are really, they're able to talk about their emotions in the game and how, you know, angry they are when someone steals their things. But I think if I was trying to talk to them without video games and saying what happens in your house when your sister takes the last pancake or something, they can't, you know, they can't identify it as well as that. But then I can kind of compare to them, like, if you're, what about solving a Rubik's Cube? And I'm just also asking them, like, what do you think is happening in your brain? Are you learning, you know, how to work as a team? Are you learning cognitive, I mean, spatial awareness? Like, are the games helping you or not helping you? And it's just, I think before I started teaching the class and doing the research, I was thinking more that video games were kind of a waste of time and a little bit, you know, of an escape. And now I have found a lot of research that says it does help with emotional processing and creativity and, you know, cognitive abilities and just awareness. So that's fun too. I think it is just a good way to find something your kid can talk about and then, you know, apply those, like that emotional awareness. How often do you feel this? You know, when does it come up? How long can you expect to feel that? What does it feel like when it takes over? You know, disappointment, what does that feel like?
Yeah.
What about for younger kids though? What could we?
Yeah, so I have some ideas, but I guess before I move to that, I did want to say too, is I think, as you and I have discussed before, we all feel so many emotions in even just an hour. Mm-hmm. And you don't really realize that until, I haven't realized that until I learned about emotional awareness and when it was able to back up a little bit to watch those emotions. Otherwise, I was just feeling them without even knowing it.
Yes.
And I think that seems like a great takeaway from what you're doing, because in a video game, it's moving so fast. I can see that you would quickly go from frustration to disappointment to, ooh, I got that guy. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm so proud of myself. Where maybe that's a little bit quicker than real life, but at the same time, maybe not. I think we move pretty quickly because our thoughts are constantly changing. Our thoughts are generating these emotions as quickly as our thoughts are coming. And just to even create that awareness in kids that we're going to experience a lot of emotions all the time.
Yeah.
And we can watch, we can put ourselves in a position of an observer.
You know? Totally. That's exactly what I kind of pointed out to them. I just named like cortisol and dopamine. And then I was like, so this is like the, maybe we'll call it like the angry hormone release and the happy hormone, and just like notice when you feel those moments. And I'm trying to call it like a cortisol moment and a dopamine moment so that they are understanding like this is a brain, you know, this is something happening in my brain right now. It's not just me feeling this. Like I happen to be feeling loving right now. It's actual dopamine, you know, flooding through my brain right now. So that they understand that this is, because the part I think that we don't look at is the thoughts. Like you said, we look at the emotions and we look at the behavior, and that's the kind of thing kids can talk about, but you're not noticing it's going, it's connected to your thought. If you're in your video game saying like, I can't do this, I'm terrible at this, the thought is causing you the upset and frustration. And then if you're in your video game thinking like, I'm awesome, I just got that guy, you know, that's the part that we don't look at. So that's kind of like the next step. And then what I think is really fun is like to look at your life as the video game. Like there, if you're you know, in trouble for, or whatever, you don't have, you're not allowed to play with your friends that afternoon. Like if this was the video game, there's nothing really like real in your life that you're missing out on. Just like the way the video game is, like you haven't created a castle, you didn't build that, it was imaginary in your head. And so this could still be, because we're thinking of circumstances as neutral, as if the things in our life don't have to mean this is the end of the world. It could just mean like, I'll stay home today and eat popcorn and read a book and then you're not upset about it. So I don't know if that makes sense, but it's like the reverse of, instead of thinking as your real life, as a real life, it's kind of all a video game, right? You can think of it as like, this isn't good stuff and bad stuff. It's just how I want to think about it.
Yeah. No, that does make sense. And I just love that it's like embracing video games, where, like you said in the beginning, I have this tendency with media, with my children, I feel like bad cop, you know, just always restricting, setting up rules around it. This much screen time, then we're off. If something happens, you lose your screen time or video games or whatever it is.
Right.
And so it becomes a little bit hypercharged, like emotions are a little overblown around that.
Yes.
That's like what I don't want to do. I'm kind of creating this hyper energy around media, which I think causes more curiosity with kids around it. And so they're more drawn to it. Like, well, why is mom freaking out about this thing? It must be awesome. And so I like even just that takeaway is using something that maybe we would normally not want to pull life lessons from. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't think to go to gaming or maybe the shows that they're watching to use as a way to teach them something. And so I love even that aspect of it.
Yeah, exactly, right? Like just sitting there watching cartoons, you can think of it as a waste of time. But if you're talking like, oh, that, you know, that guy got his feelings hurt, what is that? Has that ever happened? What has that happened to you? What does that feel like? Like, what would you do in that, you know?
Yeah. And I see more of that kind of mindfulness, push for more emotional awareness in the cartoons. And in definitely, we have a few picture books, and I see more being written and coming out all the time. And then even in my kids' classes last week, at the beginning of the day when they do the class check-in, it was happening at the same time on both their screens. Their teachers put up pictures of different emotions. Like in my younger son, who's in second grade, it was sheep. And so all the sheep, one was jumping, one was asleep, they were all experiencing these different emotions. The kids were supposed to put in the chat box the number that corresponded with the picture. This is how I'm feeling today. And then the next step was to find a person in the class that was feeling the same way they were.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was doing this kind of hurrah over their shoulder, like, good job, teachers, for promoting emotional awareness. And then there was really nothing afterwards. I didn't hear the teacher follow up with anything, which I also love, because there doesn't necessarily have to always be something said after. It's just teaching that habit of awareness and noticing. And this morning I might feel a little sleepy or groggy, or maybe I'm still hungry. Mm-hmm. And that's great for a little second grade boy to start to notice.
Yes. I think so too. Like, and we don't do, I feel like myself, I got to age, you know, 25, 30, and I would still at the end of the day be like, oh, what was that about? Right. Like I hadn't even thought in the morning, like, I'm feeling pretty distracted and hungry today. It's just like, I'm just going through my day, not even noticing, like, I'm still angry about what happened yesterday. And those are the thoughts playing through my mind. I'm still like rehashing a conversation that made me upset and staying in that frustration and then wondering like, how come I'm not getting a lot of work done today? And I don't even feel like, you know, going to the park with my friends where usually the kids hang out and we all have a good time, instead of just being aware like, oh yeah, I'm still upset about yesterday. Today I'm gonna have to pay attention to that a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. It's crazy trying to teach it to children when as an adult, you feel like a child.
Yes.
I just feel like emotional awareness, emotional regulation, like you said, because we haven't been taught this and it's not a huge part of our culture and training and upbringing, it feels very new and it's so easy to take the path of least resistance and just go back to stop a negative emotion, quote unquote negative. But I think that's one huge part in both our as adults emotional awareness and emotional education and for kids is to take the labels out of emotion, speaking about emotions that, and I actually am still forming my thoughts on this because I think it's okay to say that something is bad. It makes sense to a child, you know, and anger doesn't feel good legitimately. Mm-hmm. But for
so
me,
you mean like keep labels like anger or hurt, just don't label that as like, those are bad emotions and good emotions.
Exactly. And that's a good clarification because in the reading that I've done, those are two separate, very important key points in emotional awareness that, yes, step number one, please label your emotion. That's very important to give it a name. And if that's anger, great. If in a small child, it's my head feels like it's going to explode.
Yes.
You know, if that's how they would label it, then great. Whatever words, you know, coming out, that's step number one is give it a name.
Yeah.
And then maybe, I don't know exactly the order of steps, but another step after that would be the awareness that we're human beings and we were meant to feel all these emotions. And so feeling anger, feeling jealousy, these ones that do feel a little bit more uncomfortable, mm-hmm. and that we want to rush to label as bad, it's a natural human reaction to life and it's okay. And a lot of times it's very appropriate and good to explore your reaction to any given situation. Mm-hmm. I think you even have taught me this, that during coronavirus, as parents, you know, as we've talked to other parents, we've wanted to, again, keep our kids from suffering or seeing us suffer through the hardships and challenges of COVID. But what if the best lesson they could ever learn would be to see us struggle and have that memory years from now to look back and say, that was a really hard time for our family and mom cried every other day and yelled at us a little bit more than normal, but we pulled through it and we actually had some really good times too. And we became really close as a family,
yeah.
but mom didn't always know what she was doing. And I love that you said that because I certainly want my kids to look at me as an imperfect human, because when they're adults, I don't want them to have that expectation of themselves to always be all of these emotions that we, I guess, would label as good and
lovely
and beautiful. I want them to feel the range and feel that that's a healthy human being.
Right. Yeah, I don't want them to grow up and be parents and be like, how come I, you know, like my mom just had everything perfect every single day. And why can't I do that? I think that is like such an important lesson too. And to teach them, like, grownups have emotions. You don't outgrow emotions. Like when you're a 2 year old and you have a tantrum and a meltdown and you just want to punch the floor and lay on the floor kicking and screaming. I still have days where I wish I could just lay on the floor kicking and screaming, right? So I don't maybe act that out. But I think, you know, I did kind of grow up thinking like, oh, once you're grown up, you don't have that emotion anymore. You don't want to like lay there and kick and scream or fall apart crying. And, you know, it's like we're lying to our kids to kind of say like, no, everything's fine once we get to a certain age. Or, and like you said, a pandemic, it's a worldwide pandemic. Who knows what our kids will face when they're adults, but I want them to think like, oh, that pandemic was just like super.
Yeah, exactly. That is just weird. Why would we want them to just have everything rose colored? And I mean, I think it goes back to just not wanting them to suffer or experience pain.
Yeah. And the foreign service component of this, I think I was thinking about a lot recently because, you know, our kids, we move them around and things come up in life where we're like, oh, we might have to move next week, even though we were planning to be here another year. And so we might change schools in the middle of the year and we might, and, you know, we think of that, or I have traditionally thought of that as like a hardship for the kids. Oh no, you know, they're unsettled and I'm going to have to make another transition in their life, which was unexpected. And I'd rather just have the expected transitions of knowing exactly we're going to move after 2 years or after 3 years and everything's going to go really smoothly. And then things come up where you're moving one day and you didn't expect it. And then, And I worry that that's going to affect my kids. And now we're in this pandemic, which we never expected. And so both my teenagers have been able to, like my son went to university and we sent him off and we were like, well, I don't know if you'll be here for 1 week and then campus will close or 2 weeks, or, you know, maybe all your classes will be online or maybe you'll have some in person or who knows. And he's just like, great. All right. No big deal. Like he's totally comfortable while the other kids, I see a lot of other kids struggling and saying, what do you mean? Like my kid, if my kid doesn't know what they're doing over the next 6 months or 6 weeks, even, how can we possibly plan? It's too hard for them to be moving on campus and then come back home and then go back to campus. That's too much of a struggle to expect for a freshman. And of course I understand that. And that is a lot to take on, but we don't know how we're preparing our kids, you know, how going through some struggles in life might one day benefit them to be at a point where it's very like, all right, I can handle this. Like I've been somewhere before where I don't know if I'm going to move this weekend or not. And I'll just see how it plays out and, you know, ride it out as long as I can. And so I was really kind of glad to recognize, okay, maybe all of that was beneficial and he is able to just manage these waves that we didn't know we were preparing him for.
Yeah. And I'm so glad to hear that because you're ahead of us in child raising and I'm, you know, oldest is 9 and often feel like we're destroying our children's lives.
Yeah.
With uprooting them so often and not, my mind wants to go to these worst case scenarios, which is very much the human brain, right?
Yeah.
Like I'm not giving them enough time to make friends, or they're uprooted so often that they don't know what it means like to have a friend for more than 2 years and transition into another level of friendship. It's just that constant introducing ourselves and then playing for a couple years and then moving on. And even just last week, I was thinking, because we moved during COVID and we haven't met people in our neighborhood, and so therefore the kids don't have their regular friends that they would be out in the yard playing with, I was starting to have these thoughts like, this year is a wash before we go to our next post, and they aren't going to make friends, and what is this going to translate into in the future? This was our chance to be in the States. My friends or my kids would be making friends that spoke the same language, and they'd have an experience going to a school in the States, and all these things that we attribute to coming back home.
Right.
You know, that these takeaways, and it's just interesting because that's all my thinking projected onto this situation that my kids, that we're in right now, and that my kids are facing, thinking this is horrible. They are anxious. They might even be starting to get depressed. So my husband and I talked about it, and we took yesterday to kind of just let it sit, tabled it, and kind of tried to think more deliberately for the whole day. Where are we on this?
Yeah.
We talked again at the end of the day, and I was like, have you had any thoughts? And he said, you know what? I actually think they're doing really good. And he said, I know my kids. I watch them all the time, and I see their highs and lows, and I've seen the way they interact with each other. And I think my takeaway is that they're actually doing a lot better than we think they are. Really happy when they're playing in the basement with toys. They're super excited to be jumping on the tramp with each other. They're bringing their little baby sister into their play, which they weren't doing, you know, 4 months ago.
Yeah.
And so he just kind of started to talk about, you know, this is what I'm seeing. And I guess I needed to hear that, because in this transition, life of transition, my brain wants to take the other path. And when in actuality, if we just watch them, kind of like your son that went to college, it's like you came away almost, I don't know, am I putting words in your mouth to say, almost a little bit surprised, like, wow, like that transition went really well. And I just love that. Like, if I just watched them with a little bit, with not so much judgment and my own filter, maybe I would see that we're actually doing better than I think.
Yeah.
And yes, maybe there are things happening currently that will translate into huge advantages to them as older teens and into their adulthood.
Right.
I mean, that's what I'm hoping for, because this is just reality too. Circumstances are neutral. Like you said, there's a certain point where there's nothing I can do about certain
that's
things.
That's right. And I think the other part of it that plays into it is like when we have that vision of how it was supposed to go, like how big that imaginary version is, when you're like, I was going to move here and we were going to have lots of friends. My kids were going to get the U.S. school experience. And then that could have happened. And they could have had like a bully in their class where every day they're screaming and crying, like, please don't make me go. Please don't make me go. I just hate it. I just want to homeschool or something. You know, like we build up that vision where we're like, well, if we would have been in Rome right now, like we were supposed to be, things would be like this. And we're just making it all up. Like, who knows what would be happening if we, you know, hadn't had to leave the post early or whatever. And we get really attached to that. And I just think it like doesn't serve us. Maybe even that was true. Maybe it was all going to be wonderful and lovely, but does it help you to think about how wonderful and lovely things would have been if you know, it wasn't this way? So I think it is just, it's that awareness of like looking at it and then looking at where you are now, like, oh, my kids are happy together. You know, we spend time together. They're having like sibling bonding, and they do kind of, it is working better than I think. So it is, it's so cool that you and your husband get to have that talk and like think about it instead of go right into panic mode, right?
Well, what's so interesting is that it's just ironic. I love that you said, we just are making it up, because that's truly what it is. Like in my head, I have no idea what that better thing is.
Uh-huh.
I don't know where we'd be right now. I don't know what school would look like. I can't project onto the friends that we would have. I know nothing. So it's just a little ironic that we go to that place in our heads when we absolutely know zero about it.
Yeah.
But here's reality happening. And maybe if I wasn't project, like if I didn't spend so much time in my future thoughts,
yeah,
or past thinking like, oh, we had it so good, and just kind of brought myself to the present moment and looked, actually, we're here now,
mm-hmm,
and we're okay now. And just that irony of, you know, my kids are outside playing happily, but I'm, yeah, in the kitchen working and creating this storm in my head about how unhappy they are.
Yeah.
They're currently laughing and smiling.
Right.
Which is, yeah, it's just a wake up call. And
but it's just like how we do things, you know, yeah, why do we just do that to ourselves? Like our brain just goes to that place of being bitter and unhappy when we could just be enjoying things. Or, I mean, and there are moments, of course, when we have to be bitter and unhappy, but also, yeah, I have so many situations where I think about those things where I'm like thinking there's so much to be grateful for right now. And I mean, I guess those emotions, it just has to bubble out. There has to be, it's like that 50-50. I can't be in like happiness and appreciation all the time. So it's 50% struggle and 50% good stuff in life, and having those emotions that just come up, and it can't be all happy all the time. So,
yeah. I guess we're probably wrapping up soon. One thought that comes to mind from what we're saying too, before we go, is just the idea of self-compassion through it all, because we've talked before that, you know, as we're teaching emotional awareness and just building it and developing it in ourselves, when I lash out in anger towards my kids or my husband or even myself, you know, that secondary emotion is often guilt for having done that, or whatever other emotion would be layered on top of that. And I think that's another area I'm trying to kind of look at, is, you know, it's normal to have these human reactions and emotions to certain situations, and getting mad at your kids is totally like a normal thing to do.
Yeah.
It's okay to just leave it right there at anger and not have that secondary emotion overlap on top of anger. Like, I don't want to have guilt and anger,
yeah,
but what if I just think that was natural to react in frustration in that moment. But I guess the real life example I have of that is last week, and hopefully he doesn't care that I'm sharing this, but my husband, yeah, spoke sharply, yelled at one of our kids, and I actually was really impressed with what he did. And this is to my point of self-compassion, that, you know, it's fine to have these emotions, but he didn't really feel great about how he expressed that emotion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe there's a different way to handle our frustration than, you know, yelling at a child, which is, we do all the time, and that's normal too. But he went back and had a chat with that child and said he was sorry, and also, how did you feel when I yelled at you? Did you feel scared or like I was intimidating you? And, you know, our son said, yeah, a little bit. And so my husband was able to say, you know, I'm sorry. That's something that I don't want to do when I feel frustrated. And, you know, I'm going to try and do better. But I guess the whole point of that, it's not like to yell or not yell. You know, there are situations where I actually think it's fine. But my whole point in that is that it doesn't have to look perfect. Like this emotional awareness journey, that because it feels so new, even as in my mid-30s, that it's okay to maybe feel something, maybe I react in a way I don't want to. But I think part of that education is just going back and talking about it openly with that person and saying, I don't really know what happened there, but I realized later that I was feeling this and it actually wasn't attached to anything that you did. It was because of this.
Right.
Whatever the discussion is, it obviously is going to look different. But I think I just like that I can do that with my kids. I don't have to walk away and feel guilty about what just happened. I can go back and have an open discussion with them about.
And that's that opportunity for emotions, like we were emotional awareness. Like, how do you show your kids? What does this feel like? When he said, did you feel intimidated? Did you feel scared? It is them getting to look at, what does that mean? Does that mean someone's, you know, stronger than me and I don't have any voice? Does it mean like I'm actually worried that, but no, because I know my dad, so I'm not scared. I think that is intimidated, you know, them being able to identify that too, because I don't want to start a whole new topic, but you pointed out one time how we just have kind of three emotions and we just think of like happy, sad, you know, angry. Yeah. And nobody's looking at all these layers of like intimidation or fear or regret or, you know, nervousness and all of these emotions. We have so many and we really only identify three. And especially kids, we don't think of them being able to identify like this guilt feels a little bit different than shame, and feeling, you know, angry feels a little bit different than feeling concerned and those. So I think it is, all of that is like such a beautiful lesson in emotional awareness on both sides. And that is like compassion and teaching them as an adult, you can do something and then talk about it and figure out what happened there.
Yeah, I think it's such a journey for all ages, and we can help each other through it. But I really like your point about exploring emotions and the different vocabulary we use around them. And I really have learned that the more specific we can become with labeling our emotions, maybe it's, you know, anger can look like, 12 different things, maybe, mm-hmm. if you really dig deep. And the more specific we can get, I think the more specific we can get with pointing to where it came from, if that makes sense. You know, if that anger was actually rage, then I can say, oh, that rage was attached to this.
Right.
Or maybe the anger was jealousy, or I don't know, but it's
right. Or like your kid runs into the street and you like scream at them like stop, and then you're mad like, why did you do that? You know, that's from anger, from fear. You're
yes. Exactly.
And I think you're right, there are times when you want to have that. I don't want to see my kid run into the street and be like, oh, cool. Just sit here, you know, like thinking these emotions are valid. Why do we have anger? Because it protects us, you know, we need that. I want to have that response. And it's just interesting. It's all stuff to look at, talk to our kids about.
Yeah, really good stuff. And we need to talk more because there's so much more to talk about. Yeah. Thanks. Good topic, Angie.
Yeah, good chat. Thanks for listening to the one person out there, to Annalise's best friend.
Hello to you.